the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio. Radio Today.
This is a special Radio Today programme, and this week we're at the Radio Festival for 2021. Last year it was all done online, but we're actually here in person with some guests this year, and I'm here with the chair of the Radio Academy. It's Helen Thomas, also the head of Radio 2.
Hi, Stuart. Hello, everyone, Radio Today listeners. I'm really thrilled. Isn't it great to actually be together in a room talking about this industry that we love and hearing all these different voices? And yeah, it's thrilling. I'm really pleased to be here.
And we're in enemy territory because we're at the top of the news tower for you, and they've stolen a couple of your talents the last couple of years, Chris and Graham. Can you see now why they wanted to come and work here?
Well, the view is pretty good, I have to say, out of the building, looking at that incredible skyline. Yes, rather more spectacular than what we can see out of Wogan House, let's put it that way.
And in terms of the Radio Academy stuff, obviously you've taken over as chair in the last year or so. There's lots going on, and online stuff and during lockdown has helped us to actually put on more sessions, because you've been doing all the lunchtime kind of mini radio festivals threaded through each month.
Yeah, I'm really excited at the work of the Radio Academy at the minute. We've got a fantastic MD in Sam Bailey, and Nick Pitts as the deputy is just a joy, you know, and the whole board of trustees are really committed to moving things forward and helping our members as much as possible. The thing that I'm most excited about, well, there's lots of things that I'm excited about, but our Radio Academy mentoring program. So the first ever pan-industry mentoring program. So if you work at Bauer and you'd like to chat to somebody on a formal basis from the BBC about, you know, any issues that you're experiencing or how to get on in your career, or likewise, if you're at the BBC and you want to talk to someone from Bauer or Wireless or whatever. So to really kind of give that 360 degree view of this fantastic industry in which we work, rather than working in our silos. That's what the radio industry is here to do, because, we are uniquely positioned in the centre of the industry. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to be announcing our latest 30 Under 30, and I am absolutely thrilled. Like, the level of talent that comes through that scheme is so refreshing and inspiring to see. You know, today is all about talent. The theme of the day at the Radio Festival, redefining talent. And I think it's safe to say that the radio audio industry is in rude health when it comes to talent, both on and off the air at the moment.
And if we take that Radio Academy hat off and put the Radio 2 hat back on and talk about talent, where are you getting your new talent from for Radio 2 at the moment?
Well, all over the place, you know. We've had all kinds of people coming through our doors. You know, I'm in a really fortunate position at Radio 2 where, you know,
ring them up and they say, yeah, okay. Nobody turns you down, really, do they?
A lot of people want to come and work at Radio 2, and rightly so. You know, it's a wonderful family of presenters who all really get on and support each other. And, you know, throughout lockdown, we instigated these presenter Zooms, which were literally like the best ever editions of Celebrity Squares, you know, sitting there looking at Elaine Page and Rylan and Tony Blackburn and Claudia and, you know, Zoe. It was fantastic to see them all on a screen, all supporting and cheerleading for each other. And, you know, that's something that we've worked really hard on throughout lockdown and beyond, about our amazing family of presenters.
And I think something I spoke to your predecessor about quite a few years now ago was when the diversity question kept coming about Radio 2 and its predominantly male lineup at the time. And I think what Bob said then was, it's got to evolve. I'm not suddenly going to sack somebody and say, I'm going to replace you with such and such. And since then, that has happened. You know, we've got Zoe, we've got Sarah on your daytime lineup, and that's happened with those presenters just leaving of their own accord, rather than having to make those force changes?
Yeah, you know, a radio station, any radio station, is in a process of evolution. You know, you can't stand still. You've got to keep moving forward with the times. You know, our audience evolves, modern Britain evolves, and it's important that the radio station reflects modern Britain. So, yeah, it's something that occupies a great deal of my thinking all the time.
And it's obviously still a massive beast. You know, still, I think, even with the radars that have just come out, the biggest radio station in Europe, how do you keep kind of pushing that on and doing things to maintain that audience when there is so much choice now?
Yeah, I mean, we were thrilled with the radar figures when they came out, you know, first set for over 18 months. You know, everyone has the sleepless nights, I would imagine. Absolutely thrilled, and it's just great confirmation of the fantastic work that our presenters were doing throughout this period. You know, Radio 2 is really all about bringing people together to feel great, providing companionship and connection and laughter and escape. And I really think that we did that successfully throughout the pandemic and beyond. And yeah, that's just what we've got to keep on doing, keep focused on that, and make sure that everything, all our output, reflects that in every way, shape or form.
And we're talking about talent. And as you said, you know, when Radio 2 comes calling, there's not a lot of people will say no to that. Perhaps some people do. Maybe you'll tell us, maybe you won't. But are there any presenters or talent out there that you think I would love to have you on my radio station one day?
Well, of course, Stuart.
And now you're going to tell us who they are?
You know, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a great reflection of the state of the health of our industry right now that there are so many presenters working across all different platforms doing amazing, creative, innovative work. You know, and we want to bring people to Radio 2 where they can do their best work on the biggest platform.
And within the industry, there is perhaps sometimes, and it does tend to be a certain sector of the industry that says, oh, Radio 2 only ever give you a presenting job if you're already got some profile on TV or whatever. Are there ways for people who are working in community radio and student radio to think, oh, well, one day I want to be a Radio 2 presenter, and how do they achieve that?
Well, look, I mean, people, I receive a lot of demos. People send me demos, and I always try and give feedback. It might not be immediate. You might have to wait. You might have to nudge me a couple of times. But I think it's really important that, you know, the talent pipeline has to start somewhere, doesn't it? So I always carve out space specifically to give feedback to people who ask. But I would say, look, you know, if you want to work on Radio 2, it is great to have ambition and, you know, to really aim. These, you would be working in a stable with people who are at the top of their game. Hone your craft, put the hours in, you know, work hard, go out and meet people. Come to the networking socials at the Radio Academy, Stuart. Come and talk to people. You know, you will find people who are happy to help you on your career and give advice. We all love this industry, and we all want everyone who's in this industry to do well and have a great time.
We're looking forward to a great day at the Radio Festival. Great to be back. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you, Stuart.
So the first session at this year's Radio Festival has just finished. John Pienaar and Dino Sophos have been talking about that producer-presenter relationship. Start with John. First indication that Times Radio is doing well from your radar figures.
Look, we're standing here on the top floor of Times Towers, and we're a pretty small part of that empire. But yeah, we got the figures the other day after quite a long wait. Right, I joined Times Radio back in February of 2020. We didn't launch until the following June. And we didn't know how we were doing until just the other day. So it was more than people were imagining or expecting it was likely to be, which was great. There's a confidence about the place that we're doing the right thing in something like the right way. And although there's always loads of room to change and improve, next set of radars, I'm already keyed up and a bit nervous about those.
For you personally, I suppose, joining Times Radio obviously had the backing of the Times brand and all the other radio stations they run, but for a lot of people, they thought these big people are taking a risk here, joining a station that has no audience yet.
Well, I mean, I don't want to sort of, you know, puncture that quite flattering idea. But after 30 years at the BBC, it's not as if it wasn't a good time to change, right? I mean, and after being part of that gargantuan broadcasting organization, to join a startup, which is what Times Radio is, with a tiny fraction of those resources and no clear guarantee that it was going to work. I thought it would, by the way, because I knew who was getting involved, and I know the quality of the people in Times Radio. I thought it was going to be a good quality product. But I was very happy to make that change at that time. Look, if this is not too cliched a way of putting it, I wanted another adventure after decades of doing what I was doing.
This guy, Dino, who you've just been on stage with, was your producer at Five Live. He's now left the BBC as well. Some words of encouragement that there is life after the Beeb for him?
Oh, there's definitely life after the Beeb. And over time, I think the scope for life after the Beeb is going to grow and grow. And nobody knows that more than this guy, Dino Sophos, who was something. And I never have done this before, actually. I keep on showering him with praise. But he was something of a frontiersman when it came to, you know, new technology, new techniques, new treatments in audio broadcasting. And now he's going to do it on his own account. And who knows, maybe before long, he'll have a building bigger than this one.
Big announcement from you today, Dino, about your new podcast company as well.
Yeah, really excited. So today I'm launching my production company, Persephonica. And it's really, you know, just picking up from where John left off, you know, I'm ready for a new challenge. Been at the BBC for 14 years, and I really want this company to continue some of the work we did with Brexitcast, Americast, creating habit-forming podcasts that listeners want to be a part of. You know, information, topical information delivered in depth and served with warmth, and already got some really, really big international talent signed up for a podcast next year, which I'm really excited about. So yeah, I'm buzzing about it.
And you were talking on stage, John, about that kind of informal style. Do you find yourself more free to do things like that here at Times Radio than the BBC in terms of the restrictions placed on you?
Part of what I was saying at the festival, and I'd repeat now, was I never felt especially constrained at the BBC because they are at the BBC very strictly constrained by, you know, requirements of impartiality. And that's exactly as it should be. That doesn't mean you have to be boring. It doesn't mean you have to be vanilla. It doesn't mean you must always err on the side of saying too little rather than too much. You just have to be fair and you just have to be balanced. And when you're used to doing it, that's not a great constraint. There is a place for polemical broadcasting, taking sides. And in this building, it happens with a certain amount of success and elsewhere. It's never been my particular style. And when I joined here, I was told, look, you know, you're free to sort of give your opinion and just enjoy doing that. And I said, I'm not sure that I want to give my opinion a lot of the time. It's not really what I think I'm here for.
Because there are more outlets now, is it harder to get politicians to come on your show? Because there are, you know, talk radio to do, Times Radio, LBC, Five Live, Radio 4. And there's the issue of ministers perhaps not being put up as often for interview.
Well, look, I mean, on the sort of, you know, the mundane technical radio, you know, cycle level, I do a drive time show, and you do not see many ministers being put on air at drive time on any outlet, whether it's radio or TV. That's just not the way the cycle works routinely. In the morning, there is a grid, and you will see a cabinet minister appearing not just on one or two shows, but, you know, a load of shows. And no other minister, because the grid now rules everything. You know, back in the day when we were together, Dino and I on Peanuts Politics, earlier on in the run of that show, it was possible for me to phone up a cabinet minister and say, would you be a mate? I need a guest. Yeah. I've got a big hole in the show. And they would say yes, or they would say no. Now it's not worth asking the question, because even when they would say yes, you know, towards the later stages, it wouldn't happen. Yeah. Downing Street would come up and say, look, forget it. No, sorry, that just doesn't work today. Or I'd be told, the minister's got an engagement. It's suddenly come up. I knew perfectly well that was not the case.
We always used to have those conversations. I remember when in the supermarket, I'd be on Saturday night and we'd have a guest pull out at the last minute, and we really knew what was going on. But then, you know, we made a really great show that actually, and sometimes, you know, grilling a cabinet minister doesn't always make the best radio.
I do think that is such a valuable point. Politics is not just the, and if this begins to sound like a lecture to a media, you know, a group of media students, it's not meant to. But politics is not meant to be purely the province of politicians. It is meant to be the province of all of us. And we talked on our show And that's expanded. We're getting more of that on Times Radio. I mentioned, you know, my home planet now quite a lot. But we get people who you would not expect to talk about politics to, but why on earth not? You know, we're all living our lives, and our lives are being guided, led, the framework of our lives, legislated. You know, in so many ways are governed by politicians. It's all about business. We've all got a say, and if you're interesting, you're interesting.
Yeah, and if you think about what we did with Brexitcast and Newscast, actually, you know, you've got the people there, Laura and Katya, who were talking to the people at the very top of government, and they can say a lot more bluntly what's really going on than if you've got a cabinet minister on or a Brussels bureaucrat to kind of dress it up in kind of flowery language. Laura can literally open her notebook and go, this is what I'm being told behind the scenes at number 10. And that's a lot more valuable to the listeners.
And because of things like Brexitcast, you've got politicians, as we talked about, being more at ease and being in a kind of more informal style, and they'll tell you more things sometimes.
Yeah, and I think they were doing that in P&L's politics as well. We just played a clip of James Cleverly, who's the then Tory party chairman. God, when was that? Was that 2011? A long time ago. But, you know, it's nothing new. It's about being informal and at the same time informed, and just creating a space where people can be human beings. You know, politicians, believe it or not, are human beings. And if you create a space where you're not just hitting them over a head with a baseball bat for 5 minutes and letting them have a bit of fun, they will deliver.
Here's the Chief Content and Music Officer for Bauer Media's radio stations. It's Ben Cooper speaking at the Radio Festival on a theme of talent and also how you can be more creative and take risks with your brands.
Absolutely. I think, you know, radio is a very talented medium. It's very talented because of the people who work for it. You know, we've often had conferences, haven't we, where we talk about radio survival. And I just think it's time today to talk about radio thriving rather than surviving.
And we can take more risks now, perhaps, than 10 years ago because of the ownership of radio groups. You know, Global and Bauer are privately owned. They're not subject to stock market fluctuation. So that world we're in now is quite different to perhaps, you know, 10 years ago.
I think the world has changed dramatically in 10 years. And, you know, one of the quotes that I use in my speech in my blog is, what got us here won't get us there. You know, we have to keep changing with our audiences and with the artists that are creating great music and with the advertisers who want to reach those audiences in new ways.
And you've been in your job at Bauer just over a year now, obviously after a long career at the Beeb. What impact do you think you've made already in terms of bringing that disruption and doing things differently at Bauer?
Well, I think, you know, I joined Bauer at a really exciting time. There's an energy and a passion to want to actually try new things. And I think bringing me in was part of that. So, you know, whether that's getting, you know, Simon Mayo to move from Scala to Greatest Hits Drive Time, whether that's moving Greatest Hits onto FM in London, whether that's the launch of the premium subscription service for Kerrang and Jazz and Planet Rock and Scala. There are many, many things that, you know, that Bauer have been up to this year and have got planned for next year.
I think in your blog and the speech that you've just given as well, you talked about the importance of diversity within radio groups now. And I think that is becoming more apparent.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we are doing very well at the lower sort of entry levels. You know, there are various schemes and various initiatives that are bringing a real richness of diversity and diversity of thought into the business. And that's got to be praised and got to be supported. But it's what can we do more of today that will actually accelerate? Because we can't just wait for that generation to grow into leadership roles or to grow into those older focus stations. We've got to do more. I've got to do more. And my colleagues have got to do more to try and make sure that we get that diversity across the board within our industry.
And your first set of radar figures since you joined Bauer just came out last week. Have you had a chance to dig deep into what they're showing you yet?
As you know with me, radar is only part of the story. It's obviously an incredibly important part of the story. But, you know, and I'm really pleased for, you know, stations like Absolute getting over 5 million. That's always been its ambition to get over 5 million for the network. Also, you know, some great results in terms of increase of hours across the board. I was really pleased that Greatest Hits performed brilliantly in London, and really think there's a lot of things that we could do for Hits Radio. Sorry, we've got a very noisy trolley going past us here.
Us some drinks.
I think it might be coffee time. But the one area that I think is going to be really important for us to look at is that area of youth audiences. You know, I know that both KISS and Radio 1 had some issues in this book, but I think we've got to be careful not to jump to a conclusion that it's just purely about youth audiences. I think there are also some other factors. You know, both stations changed their schedule at a time when people were looking for familiarity. And you can see that with Heart and with Magic, that, you know, people really did want that sort of comfort blanket during the pandemic. So I think you've got a changing a schedule, playing new music. You've also got the factor that both those stations really, really rely on in-car listening. And obviously, that was going to be massively affected. So I think we've got to be careful that we don't jump to too massive conclusions. But obviously, they are at the coalface, and they do need our support. But that's about winning new audiences in new ways. And that's what we're all about at Power.
I think the last time we spoke to you, it was around the radio festival last year when you were fairly new in the job. You hadn't even met most of your colleagues at that point. Presumably you've been in the building and seen people now. How's that getting on?
It's amazing to actually see people in 3D. It's lovely. And but you do have to sort of double take when you kind of go, I think I've met you. I'm not sure. I sort of almost kind of try and put a frame around their face and go, yeah, no, I do know who you are. But it's wonderful. And I think, you know, I am someone who really misses getting a group of people into a room, getting an energy going, getting that excitement going, getting those ideas coming out. And I've found it really hard this last year because we haven't had that opportunity. And video calls are very good at functionally carrying the business on. But if we really are to look and be curious and be creative, then I can't wait to get back in the building.
And finally, one of the things you just talked about at the festival was about doing things differently and being disruptive and doing things that perhaps you're not expected to always do. Bauer has taken quite a significant chunk of programming via the Audio Content Fund produced by Indies. How has that worked for Bauer in terms of that relationship, you getting the programming and also working with Indies, which commercial radio hasn't always done?
I'm a huge supporter of the Audio Content Fund. I think it's done some amazing things in partnership with Bauer and Indies. You just need to look at the fact that Magic won the ARIA Station of the Year, and the fact that, you know, two of the things that the judges highlighted was the F word talking about fertility, and also about the opportunity that we took to replace the midday news bulletin with audio diaries from key workers who were working through the sort of the pandemic and lockdown. Without it, we wouldn't have probably won Station of the Year. So it's vital, I think, and it gives also an opportunity to commercial radio to put out public service broadcasting. And I think that is a really, really important thing.
Super. Nice to see you again in person, and a bit of a reunion going on. I've seen Allard's here today, and Comedy Dave. It's like the Chris Moyles show because producer Ben's here as well.
Yeah, Dave was there. I saw Dave earlier, and there was Will Kinder as well. So yes, it's been quite a reunion.
So the theme of the radio festival this year is talent, and we've just been hearing on stage from two of the leading speech radio controllers in the UK. Mohit Bakaya from Radio 4 is here, and Liam Fisher, the speech controller for News UK's radio stations, including the Times Radio, Talk Radio, and Talk Sport. And a really interesting discussion about diversity. A lot of your networks have changed, Liam, particularly with TalkSport over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a lot, and yeah, particularly in and around the breakfast show. So we've taken a very long established show in Alan Brazil, who's been doing the show for 20 years. He continues to do it on the Thursday and a Friday, but it was getting increasingly tough for him, you know, 5 days a week. So Laura Woods, who was already a sort of contributor and regular sort of part of the breakfast show, has come in to do it Monday to Wednesday alongside a former Scottish striker in Ali McCoist. We like to keep the theme of old Scottish strikers in there. So he does it alongside Laura Monday to Wednesday, and Alan has stayed on for Thursday and Friday. So we like to think we've got the best of both worlds, really, and the audience has stayed with us as well. And then the likes of Natalie Sawyer presenting Saturday and Sunday breakfast, so breakfast show 5 days a week, presented by a female host, Reshmin Chowdhury hosting our, you know, marquee football on a Saturday at lunchtime as well, and countless other changes in terms of the pundits, particularly on TalkSport.
And we've obviously just had the first set of radars since you made those changes. Have you seen any impact in terms of the demographics who are listening? Because TalkSport has generally always been a white van man, kind of both a white man and a man driving a white van kind of station.
A little bit. It is changing. I think it, you know, what we're trying to do is obviously, you know, you're chasing as big audience numbers as you can possibly kind of get. So you want to keep you want to keep the sort of traditional listeners alongside trying to add in new listeners. And I think that's what we're sort of beginning to see. And for us, it's as well been about growing, you know, something I didn't really sort of talk about today, which is the sort of social element as well. So the sort of look and feel of TalkSport on the social sites like YouTube and Twitter as well. So it's been a lot about that as well.
And Mo, I know you've made a few changes since you came in as controller. How much can you impact the schedule for a station like Radio 4, where you've got a lot of built programming, you've got a lot of big brand programs that have existed for years and years? How as a controller can you come in and make changes?
Well, I mean, you're right. It is. I mean, the joy we have is we have so much. And so whereas kind of Liam is ultimately you're dealing with kind of quite a few kind of key programs, we have you know, a large and very varied schedule. And we have podcasting as well. And podcasting has been an incredible opportunity for us to bring in new people. So, you know, but, you know, we've made great changes with Emma Barnett and Anita Rani doing Woman's Hour. That was a big kind of, you know, blue chip brand, which has now changed quite dramatically as in the last couple of years. You know, bringing in Johnny Pitts on Open Book, bringing in Chris Mason on Any Questions, down to the Yorkshireman, you know, bringing in, you know, so many other people who have basically helped us kind of, as you say, diversify and kind of, and the word I like to use is representation, because it's just representing modern Britain. That's all you're really trying to do. But podcasting as well, you know, getting Joe Wicks to do a podcast or Danny Robbins or whatever, you know, it's kind of a fantastic way of just bringing in new talent. So although, of course, Radio 4, we have to, you know, as Liam was saying, you have to absolutely kind of be aware of your audience and not move at a pace that they're uncomfortable with. This new digital landscape allows you to really experiment, to take risks, to kind of broaden your horizons, and then when it feels right, to kind of make those big transitions.
And you mentioned Chris Mason and Anita Rani and Emma Barnett, all Northerners, but I think other than those, there are not many Northerners on your network of every presenter. So do you feel... Okay, Melvin Bragg. Yeah, very true. How representative of the UK do you think you are as a station?
I think actually there are more Northerners. I mean, one of the kind of interesting things about Radio 4 is that people suddenly sometimes can sound like they're not from where they actually are from. Nick Robinson, you know, is a Northerner, you know, so, and actually I should have mentioned Amar Rajan earlier, who's come to today's program. Again, another kind of big, you know, change for us. But, you know, of course there's more to do. And it's not just about being Northern. It's about kind of representing all of the UK. It's about, you know, Kirsty Walker's come on to do the reunion. You know, so it's, you know, really, you know, fantastic Scottish voice for us there. But there's always more to do.
And both of you have access to talent from across your organisations. Clearly, the BBC is bigger than just Radio 4. And at News, you've got more stations launching things like Virgin Radio and coming soon, Talk TV. If that brings big names in, does that help you have a pool of talent within this building that you can access?
Definitely. I mean, we try and really work collaboratively together. And I think that as a commercial station, perhaps we've got a bit more sort of agility to be able to kind of do that. The BBC, I would say, sometimes lacks because of the heritage broadcast and just the way it's always kind of been. It's tougher to sometimes move. For us, it's always been a sort of feeling of if Chris Evans so wishes as he's walking in the morning and he wants to pop into the breakfast show, he can do that. And we sort of encourage that, but we don't expect it. And similarly, I don't think Graham Norton's popped up on TalkSport yet, but I look forward to the moment that he decides that he wants to espouse Tottenham's latest managerial change. So I think that's, you know, that's what at its heart it should be about. And there's, you know, countless examples of what we're sort of doing day to day to try and get different people onto sort of different stations. Because ultimately, if it's growing the overall pool of people who are listening to the wireless stations and sampling, so if a Times Radio listener that we've managed to recruit in isn't aware of Virgin Radio and suddenly goes over there to listen to Virgin Radio, that's exactly what we want.
And at Radio 4, clearly there are people right across BBC News who get parachuted in to present news programmes. How involved are you in those decisions? Obviously, within your network, you've got Today and The World at One and PM and The World Tonight and BH and programmes that are made by BBC News. Do you just get given those and saying, this is the talent?
No, not at all. And, you know, and I think, obviously, as you say, News is run through a different kind of management structure. But no, it's a collaboration. And, you know, getting Amal on today was a proper conversation between me and News. And, you know, in this case, we were happily in the same place. You know, sometimes we are, sometimes we aren't. But it's always a conversation and it's always ultimately a joint decision, and nothing happens on Radio 4 without the controller of Radio 4 being happy.
Sounds like you might get Laura Koonsberg on your breakfast show soon as well.
I'm going to pass on that.
I thought you might. Something I heard Leslie Douglas, who was at the time the Radio 2 controller, talking about quite a few years ago now, was she was asked who her dream presenters would be to get on her radio station. And she said, oh, Michael Ball, absolutely love him. And then a couple of years later, Michael Ball turned up on Radio 2. So I'm going to ask you the same. For one of your speech networks, is there a presenter somewhere else that you think, you know, I would love to nail that person down and get them onto Talk Sport or Times Radio?
Well, I would have said someone like Piers Morgan until recently, but now he's joining the family for Talk Radio. I might be able to persuade him to do an Arsenal phone-in at some stage or a cricket phone-in. I mean, there is quite a few people out there, to be honest. I think, you know, for Talk Radio, people at the heart of government, it's always good to kind of hear from them. And for Talk Sport, it would be pundits like Gary Neville.
Yeah. And Jose Mourinho in for
Jose
the Euros.
Jose Mourinho did us a great turn at the Euros, and he was fantastic. I remember, like, every time they'd ask him a question, I'd sort of feel like, oh, he won't answer this one. So it'd be like, you know, what would your lineup be for England's kind of first game? And he'd sort of shrug as he does. And he'd sort of say, well, it's not for me to pick the team. It's Gareth Southgate picks a team. You go, oh, that's a very safe answer. But then you go, oh, here we go. I'll go for it. Henderson in goal. And you'd be like, well, this is just great dynamite stuff. And I think those sorts of people have the courage of their convictions, and they make such fantastic radio and such fantastic moments. So that's what you're always kind of looking for, the people that are going to sort of shake things up a little bit.
And Mo, what's your fantasy side for Radio 4 look like?
I mean, I could be facetious and say I've already got it. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, I think people like Louis Theroux and John Ronson were people we really wanted to get on network. Louis Theroux's now done a brilliant kind of multi-million kind of podcast for us. And John Ronson's starting a podcast and series for us next week. You know, if Barack Obama and Bruce Springsteen wanted to kind of do their double up on Radio 4, I think we'd take them.
Here's Farrah McKenzie, the head of Radio 1 Extra, and talking on stage about your journey into radio, which to get to kind of running a big national radio station is perhaps a little bit different to other people's.
Absolutely. Thank you, Stuart. somewhat different. I think my route into radio is very unconventional. But then I do believe that I possess a number of transferable skills that actually boded quite well for the network and for the job and what things that I was doing at the BBC at the time. So, yeah, very unconventional route, but I think it kind of boded well for me in the end.
And how much does that say about One Extra as a network and what they wanted by hiring you?
I think it says a lot about Lorna Clark and her ambition for pop more broadly. You know, the fact that, you know, we now have individual heads that are in pop, it feels like it's more of a kind of a family. We move as a portfolio, which is very different to how we've ever worked before. And then on top of that, I think it's just the ambition that now exists between each individual head and then just driving that forward.
And how important is it to have people who haven't, you know, done the traditional route to get to controller in terms of when you're making decisions and when you're hiring and you're deciding the future of a network?
So I like to kind of base everything on a diversity of thought, right? So you get individuals in the room that don't come from the similar backgrounds or from a lived experience, present a challenge, put it on the table, and then just do blue sky thinking. When you do that, that's when kind of greatness comes out. So yeah, I think it's important for the radio industry to kind of open its doors and start to thinking a little bit more kind of, you know, laterally about what do they need to actually evolve what radio actually is. Because I always say to the team that I believe One Extra is more than just radio. It's a cultural brand. It does things that doesn't just kind of sit on the radio network. You know, we have an amazing outreach team. We've got visualization. We're traveling around the globe collecting content. So, you know, all of that kind of content needs kind of creative thinking that doesn't necessarily always exist within the team that are there. So you've got to bring in outside talent, I think.
And how important is it that what you do at One Extra is showcased within Radio 1 and other bits of the BBC?
I think it's important, but I also think it's important to remain brand integrity. You know, we work quite closely with BBC Three, as I mentioned in the presentation, and it wasn't a relationship that was born from, oh, we've created this great content, would you mind publishing it because, you know, we want to reach that audience. It was actually thinking about how do we actually integrate and co-commission some content that works best for both networks, so there's attribution back. So, yeah, I think just different ways of working, I think, is important.
And we're going to hear today at the festival about youth audiences. Yep. You're right at the nub of that. We've seen some drops in the latest Radar figures for youth brands. Yep. How do we tackle that as an industry?
Well, it's an attention economy, right? So, you know, you've got to remember that when you're talking about youths, they've not necessarily grown up with radio. They've grown up in a digital age. They've got YouTube, you know, the stats around kind of listening to podcasts, for instance. They would prefer to watch a podcast because of how they've come about. So I think that, you know, in terms of how we can actually address the attention part is just getting closer to what they're consuming and who they're consuming it from. Yes, it's great that we can get great big artists and all that into the building. But how do we then connect with their fan bases to bring them in to say that we've got something really, really special that you're not going to get anywhere else? And that's on One Extra.
And when I was growing up and wanted to get into radio in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, it was Radio 1 was the pinnacle, but you never thought you could ever get there. Yeah. With the technology we've got now and the access to being a presenter, how much easier is it for somebody who's listening now to One Extra in their bedroom to be presenting on the station in a couple of years' time?
I think the traditional model of talent development still exists. You know, you could look at the kind of surge in influencers online, but do bear in mind that they do kind of create kind of edited content, and we are live, and so there's definitely the development and the training that's needed. I think it's about finding talent that you probably wouldn't normally kind of, you know, think about in some instances as being on air talent, and then just going out to the places and spaces where they are and trying to kind of, you know, bring them into the fold and try and offer them something a little bit different.
And you've got a fairly new breakfast show on your stage as well. How's that getting on?
It's going great. I mean, Nadia Jay is absolutely fantastic. I've known Nadia prior to coming to the BBC, and she's always been that kind of big, bubbly kind of character, almost like your kind of older sister, that just kind of wakes you up and brings you into your day in a really kind of passionate and, like, you feel invested. I was actually out last night with some of the guys, Bob Shannon actually, and
let me just pick that name up after.
I'm not name dropping at all. But Bob actually kindly invited myself and Lorna to attend this event, and you know, I bumped into just a lady that she was actually a listener. And she actually loved Nadia, and she was talking about all of the features in the show, all the things that are happening. So, you know, it's great that it's really connecting.
Nice to chat to you, Farron. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio, except the way you make it.
Matt Deegan's here at the Radio Festival, a strategist, as you were described as there.
And that's my old job,
You're coming up with some new strategy for teenagers. Tell us what your proposals are.
Yeah, it's very easy when you don't work for a big radio group. You can just lob some hand grenades in and see what happens. No, so what I was saying was, actually, 15 to 19-year-olds is the radio industry's problem. And if you look at the latest Radar, there are a million less of them listening than over the last 5 years. But also that they're listening a lot less to radio, 40% down. Now, this isn't... You know, there's been some declines over the years, but actually from reach, not so bad. I think, you know, 15, 24, something, I think I said something like 6.4 to 5.9 or whatever, about 10% down, which isn't too bad. But it's this 40% of hours dropped 15 to 19 year old that's a problem. And I suggested that part of the reason that that's the case is we don't make any radio stations for teenagers. Yes, there are some stations which have some things they like Capital and Kiss and Radio 1, and they do great things. And I think actually all three of them are probably creatively in a great place, and they have been for a long time. But we don't make anything for teenagers. And I, you know, one of the things I do, I run a radio station for children called Fun Kids. And
my kids love it. They're 11 and 9, but they're not teenagers yet.
Yeah, and it's before they go to secondary school, we have them. And then when they leave secondary, when they get to secondary school, they need cool stuff. They need other things. And what we know from the kids is that they love fun because it talks their language about the things they're interested in. And this isn't brain surgery. This is what radio is great at in whatever demographic. And so we should make something for teenagers. That's my push.
Who should be making it for teenagers? Are you suggesting the BBC should be, or one of the big commercial groups?
I'd be happy for anybody to do it. But what I suggested was, why don't Global Bow, the wireless group, and the BBC work together to create a teenage radio station, purely out of their own motivated self-interest. You know, perfectly to get kids engaged with radio, and let's use that station to plug Jingle Bell Ball, which sold out today. Well done to everyone at Global. And yeah, they do have some programming that is of interest to teenagers. Of course they do, but let's build a platform and build a radio station for teenagers. Why don't you know, what it's Radio Player, but for teenagers? That's my vision.
You know the industry very well, as I do. Do you think that could ever happen, honestly, realistically?
Well, on Radio Player, everybody works together. On Radio, everybody works together. So it's perfectly achievable. Whether they want to do it or not is something else. I think what I was keen to say today, and it was great to do at the Radio Festival, was carrying on down the same path is not going to change the result. And also, I don't think even the sort of the oomph of BBC or Radio 1 on its own or Capital on its own can fix this problem. It needs to be a demographic solution rather than just a single product solution. And I put a chart on which had the most numbers ever on a screen, which basically says that your average hours when you're 15 of listening to the radio, you keep through the rest of your radio listening life. So if you started off listening to 15 hours a week when you were 15, you do when you're 45. And that average hours for 15-year-olds is dropping and dropping and dropping. So if they don't fix it now, less people will listen to Heart and listen to Greatest Hits Radio or Scala or Classic FM. You know, I was watching the session there with Alid and Rebecca. I thought they did a great job there. They're like the equivalent of Barbados with climate change. You know, they're facing the real difficulties now. The big people, the people of the other countries that haven't really had to worry about climate change or know it's going to be a problem later, can just sort of ignore what's happening in Barbados. And I think actually if you're their bosses or you're the radio sector as a whole, it's very easy to ignore the teenage problem because, hey, Heart's figures are great and 25-45s are okay and Boom Radio is doing brilliantly because their audience love radio and are tuned in. So if the groups and the BBC don't do something significant, you know, more than just BBC Sounds or Capital Dance or those things, then they are going to have a massive problem.
Interesting you mentioned Boom, because those 15-year-olds at the time were listening to pirate radio stations in the 60s, weren't they?
Why did pirate radio work at that time? Because it wasn't BBC, which was the only radio that was really out there. It was doing what teenagers wanted, playing pop songs and being cool and having a nice time, and transformed actually what normal radio then became because of the power of it. And so actually I think there is some examples of that working. I think what's interesting, kids don't not like the radio. You know, actually Reach is okay. 15-19s have dropped, but you know, there's still a lot of radio consumed. It's just the amount, you know, the hours that they consume has dropped. So
because there are too many other things, whether that's gaming or whatever.
Well, there's lots of good competition with things that do speak their language. And so, you know, we don't have a right to have young people listening to the radio. You know, it's no God-given right. But if we want them to, then we've got to make some efforts.
Should the youth stations be worried that they're actually still getting older listeners? I saw on your graphs on the screen, there's a lot of, you know, 35 plus are listening to Radio 1 and Capital and Kiss.
I think, you know, ages and demographics are less prescriptive than they used to be. I think, you know, Ben Cooper got stuck in a bit of a rut trying to get rid of old listeners when he was at Radio 1. And like, there's physically very little you can do. Probably the only way to redo it is to do something different, you know, create a new service for them. And make sure that your radio station, for Radio 1 or for Kiss or for Capital, you know, constantly thinking about what your core audience are interested in and being attuned to them. If some older people listen, hey, they listen. But product, the teenage youth thing is product. We don't really make anything. Like Capital Extra is probably the closest to being a teenage radio station. But the sector needs to do something.
And finally, you talked about having teenagers involved in the production of radio, whether that's existing radio stations or a new teenage radio station. How important is that for the future of our industry?
I think one of the problems for people who run radio stations is they're all old. And I count myself in that as well. If you want to really reflect teenage lifestyle, a lot of them need to be teenagers. If you haven't been to the Global Academy and you have a reason to be able to go there, go. We did some fun kids stuff with the Global Academy. Really engaged, exciting bunch of young people doing really interesting things. They're learning Adobe Creative Suite like we learned Microsoft Office. why can't we channel into that? Same Barrow Academy, we're at the Wireless Group at the moment, and you know, they've got a big apprenticeship program. So yeah, I think we should get them involved. Student Radio obviously has people involved from the target demo in it. I put up a slide from Press Gang that some of you will remember, the TV show where kids ran a newspaper. Got a laugh in the audience from the cameraman when I put that up. But yeah, I think helping those people make good radio, but leaning into what they're interested in, I think would be fascinating and would actually help a lot of our traditional radio services as well.
Thank you, Matt. And if you want more from Matt, of course, you can get him on the every fortnight on the Media Podcast Now. And great blog this week about podcasts and how to make them better.
Yes, his weekly newsletter about audio, radio and streaming at mattdeacon.com. Or you follow my Twitter, you can get it there every week. I'm really enjoying writing the newsletter. I have a slight shock on a Monday evening when I'm like, oh God, I've got to write something for tomorrow.
Yeah, that was what it's like making a weekly podcast before, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So no, I'm enjoying doing that. And I've been asked to sit in on the Media Podcast for a bit. So again, showing off every fortnight, I'm more than happy to do that.
And listen to the latest one all about Rajar on the Media Podcast with Phil Riley and Stig Abel and Anne Charles as well. Thanks, Matt. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
So something quite unique has just happened. We've had the heads of Radio 1 and KISS on stage together, actually getting along and really enjoying it. Alad is here, who's the head of Radio 1. And Bex is content director at KISS. I mean, you used to work together at Radio 1, but you know, you get on very well. And it's great to see that collaboration going on across the industry.
Yeah, there's loads that Alid and I talk about, whether it is, you know, in the middle of a pandemic going, are you in the office? What's going on? How do you make radio shows sound? Yeah, what's going on? Are you okay? There's loads that we don't talk about, you know, for really good reasons and respectful reasons. So, yeah, we have a huge amount of respect for each other. And, you know, as we discussed in the session, there's so much to achieve for young audiences and radio, so many ideas that need to be shared, that you know, working together in the right ways can only be a good thing.
I haven't got much more to add to what Max just said, but I agree. It's a unique role when you're doing it. I love the job, but it's not like you can call too many people up and ask how they're finding it. And so Bex and I have many situations that are similar, even if we can't really go into those details together.
I just got taken back kind of 15, 18 years when Comedy Dave just walked past and Alad's in front of me. So yeah, that's me as a 20-something going, oh, well, that's
good. Great. Will is here too.
Will's here as well. I'm producer Ben. But anyway, we must go back into that. But one of the interesting that Matt Deegan was saying, which I think really rings true, is he's looked at the data going back 15 years. And as a 15-year-old, the amount of radio you listen to each week translates and comes across to a 30-year-old. And that number is dropping. So from kind of 15 hours a week, as it was, to now maybe 10 hours a week. How do we stop that happening?
So I'll need to look at that data. So I'm not commenting on his data, but the narrative that I've been seeing is very similar. But we were an industry of a few national stations a few years ago. We are now an industry of, I don't know, 50 I can get in London on my DAB. So the market is getting wider. The competition is getting more intense. There are more things to take people's attention. I think what you're asking, that the premise that we should be at the same level these years later, is an impossible one. It's about saying, what's the mix for young people when it comes to their attention? And radio, being 80% plus young people, is very strong. It may continue to go down, or now that the pandemic has happened and 99% of young people have access to streaming and access to YouTube and access to social media, are we at a state in our evolution of being able to look at what mixed radio can take, and that ceiling or floor, or however you want to look at it, is within reach now? So I'm not panicked that the numbers have been dropping, because there's no reason to suggest that is now a managing decline for the next 10 years. It's a reaction to, firstly, the competition, which makes sense. And secondly, the latest Rajar that he talked of. I'm not sure if Matt went into detail on this Rajar, but this Rajar is not a statement about the radio industry. It's a statement about what young people did in the pandemic. And here's a shocker. If young people are not going to school, college, or work, they're going to wake up later. And if young people are at home and aren't in their cars where there are radios, they are accessing Netflix and YouTube. That's what I saw in Rajar. Are we really going to panic over that?
And because your younger listeners were waking up later, you moved Greg to later and he's on till 10:30 in the morning now.
He's on till 10:30, exactly. And Lon Laverne is on even later and her breakfast show went up. And there are other breakfast shows that are earlier and their numbers went down. What appears to have happened is, and I was telling our station about this from my kitchen at home, so even in, you know, beginning of November, I'm still doing some days from home, is that there is less commuting. And I think we all know how important commuting is to radio. So the question is what everyone's asking outside of radio, when, what is the future of commuting and people's habits rather than what's the future of radio?
And a similar story with KISS, obviously. History, absolutely flying still, biggest commercial digital radio station, the main KISS station, dropping a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everything that Alice just said, then that double whammy of, you know, young people and habits and distraction and attention plus pandemic. But I also think there is something interesting about, you know, the mood of a radio station and, you know, the expectation of what you're going to get when you switch on, which actually Alid sort of mentioned in our session, is really important for stations like ours to maintain. And I think that, you know, what we don't know in the future is, did that need state get fulfilled by streaming services, Disney Plus, who sponsor on KISS, I might add. There's a sign, there's an ironic sign for you. Have we lost those audiences? Have those new habits been formed forever? Are they going to get that comfort from a podcast in the morning rather than a radio station? Are they going to get that kind of mood boost or that relaxation kind of mood that they need from playlists rather than radio? And I would like to say no, because otherwise I don't think Alan and I would be here a week after radio. I think that those are the questions that we need to more data on, but I think we have to follow our instincts that we are crazy to think that everything's going to ping back to normal, whatever that is, sort of pre-pandemic. I think we all have to be on our toes. What's in my mind now is about being even bolder as an industry.
One of the things that the data shows as well is that both of your stations and Capital have got quite a chunk of older listeners. And I know this has been an ongoing discussion for Radio 1 about the average age of the listener and bringing it down. Those older listeners are still valuable in terms of the reach and the hours that you're getting. And commercially for KISS, they've got money to spend, where a 15-year-old isn't perhaps spending money.
Yeah, I guess it's the sort of future spenders, future-proofing, having a brand that stands for something, you know, versus all chasing the same audiences. I mean, I just saw that most of Capital's gains, I think, came from 55+. You know, I think that if we were to start chasing that in order to put on the numbers, I think we would soon become homogenous. And I think actually in the long run, not standing for something, not having an identity and not being there for young at heart or younger audiences would mean that our platform is much shorter.
And that's where you need the BBC, in my mind, because we will not need to chase wealthy listeners, and the BBC can focus on the younger audience. Radio 1 have people. I'm in my 40s and I listen to Radio 1, and I would be listening to Radio 1 even if I wasn't running it. Everyone's welcome to listen, but as long as we do well with what for me is 15 to 24 year olds, then that's what's important. And sounds, so I would also like to add that when we say radio, we're obviously talking about live radio, but our brands need to be flexible enough to bring in as many of those need states as possible. So there are Radio 1 podcasts, there are Radio 1 on-demand shows, there are Radio 1 playlists, there are live radio. We're also YouTube and social, and I think it's important that we are able to provide as many touch points for our young audience as possible.
You mentioned you're in your 40s. I think Scott Mills is slightly older than you, but, you know, sounds great on Radio 1.
Annie Nightingale is even older. Yeah, she's phenomenal.
But they sound great, and it's about the content rather than the age of the presenter. This is the long argument that's been going on years and years.
It's about relevance for the audience. Yeah. Are they supplying what's needed for a young audience? And I'm really proud of the lineup I have on Radio 1 right now for doing that.
Quick question about talent and where it comes from. Obviously, Radio 1's been stealing from KISS and Capital.
Well, let's not use that word.
Before my time.
There's a bit of movement across the brands. I'm really pleased to hear that you're working together and talking to each other about sharing talent as well.
I have one that I'd love to talk about, Tatum.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tatum McGreal, yeah, we didn't even let you ask a question there, did we? That's how close we are. Tatum McGreal was an amazing presenter whose demo I received, I think, on email last May.
She was on 2BR, which became Capital, I think.
Correct. And she was on many stations. She's a real radio head, real young radio head. And she had done, and she sent her cover letter in with this demo, that she had done the Christmas demo uploader scheme that Radio 1 brilliantly do each year. And that, you know, sparked my attention. because that's, I knew that she had been through a huge filter of quality and that I trusted that BBC filter, quite frankly. But not least that, she wrote a very emotive kind of cover letter. Her demo was amazing. And I ended up actually creating a slot for her on KIS, an early breakfast slot that we didn't have before, which now is obviously about development and bringing voices in rather than trying to make money from. But yeah, no, that's a really good example of it being the other way. But what was your question? You were going to ask us something. No,
it was just about where talent comes from. Obviously, you know, it's that used to be getting to Radio 1 or getting to KIS, to a national station, you've got to have some profile, or you've got to have done something before. But because you want to get younger presenters and newer talent in, you can't always go looking in those places.
I think there's still a healthy Radio 1, and I'm only talking about Radio 1 here. The healthy Radio 1 is a patchwork of a range of skill sets. So you do need to have personality presenters, music presenters. Everyone's going to love music, but you also want people who are from the music industry. You want to have radio people. You want to have famous people. You want to have student radio. And what I've been doing is trying to ensure the pipeline of new coming into the industry, Radio 1 has a place for them. That doesn't mean Radio 1 is now going to become a student radio station, but we are just ensuring that that's a strong pipeline.
Similar at KIS, although I would say that, you know, we've got talent that have come from all walks of life. Yes, community radio stations, but Jordan and Perry had never done a live radio show before their launch show last August. But we knew that the skills and the kind of relationship with audiences, the ability to connect and think quick and share their lives was already there through their social media work and from doing telly and connecting with audiences on a stage with diversity. By the same token, I've got people like Michael Lewis, who's been on KIS for many years. He does the 1 o'clock till 4 o'clock show in the afternoon. He's not somebody that's, you know, suddenly going to end up being a YouTuber or even kind of do brand deals outside of KIS. He's an excellent radio anchor. And that's what I need from that player on the field at that time in the afternoon. So yeah, just to back up what Alan said, really, you know, different roles, different sensibilities. It is the diversity of the types of people that we have on with different superpowers that's important.
How far, finally, do you think we can go as an industry at working together? Matt talked about having a joint platform for teenage audio content, for radio content, to showcase what Capital and KIS and Radio 1 and other youth brands can do. Do you think we might ever get there?
You ask how far we could go. I'd like to just start. You know, I'd like to have a drink with Radio 1, Capital and KIS, you know, all talking about the things we're facing, the challenges we're facing, and maybe sharing some wins and ideas and thoughts. I think there's a lot we could do as a youth industry. And then, you know, there will always be, and when Bex poaches Greg James, this relationship will be tested. But of course, that's a realistic, mature way to deal with things. But I think there's lots more that could be done. And yeah, and I hope today is the start of that process.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it would be naive to say it's about us becoming a homogenized sort of union, working as one unit on everything together. At the end of the day, I run a commercial brand. Alid has a completely different role in society, quite frankly. That's really important.
And personally, yeah. Already one.
No pressure, love, but you do. And so do I, you know, just in completely different ways. You know, I just think that utopia is actually what Alid said, is about just beginning to share and think smarter as an industry, but not just looking within ourselves. Because I think the radio industry could, if we act too homogenized and together, stop looking outside. And that is where we need to be more agile and kind of bold with our ideas.
Well, let's hope we can make it happen. Thanks for talking to us, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Claudia Winkleman is here at the Radio Festival. Fairly new to radio compared with everything else you've done. Are you enjoying it?
I absolutely love it. I mean, when I first started, I think I did the art show in 2010 or something like that. And that was late at night and a bit wild, and everybody who came on was absolutely hammered. And I loved it. Then I did Sunday night, and that was nice and calm. And yeah, now Saturday morning, I'm very lucky.
And that's not as calm on a Saturday morning.
Not quite as calm, but also some people are having a slow waking up, you know, relaxing. I don't think they don't want to race. They don't want to feel like they're racing. But yeah, it's lovely.
And you were talking on stage with Clara about this kind of imposter syndrome, that you don't really think any of the things that you're doing are really going on.
No, I think you seem absolutely charming. There is absolutely no
this
way.
This can't be real life.
You've got nothing to do with radio today. And they've got you from Central Casting, and well done, everybody. Thanks, Mum. Thanks, Dad. Yeah. But I think imposter syndrome, or a bit of it, is completely healthy. I mean, you and I have both met people that don't have imposter syndrome, and they're here. atheist. You want to have lunch with them? No.
Muggles. So the Strictly stuff that you do and the radio stuff, how do you kind of get yourself into the mindset of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be on the telly in front of millions, I'm going to be on the radio in front of millions?
I'm going to be honest with you, Saturday's quite weird right now, because I used to just doing lovely radio and that's what I would do. And then I'd get home and my family would be like, oh, babe, we've got some cauliflower cheese in the oven. And I'd go, oh, thanks. And now I get my radio head on, which I still get incredibly nervous about. And we interview big people. And
you were saying you get in really early in the morning as well. Is that right?
I get really early in the morning because I drive the desk. So I just want to sit there and practice like an idiot. Is this embarrassing that I'm saying this to you? So I get there really early and fluorescent orange, four double dip tans, I'm going to be frank, with wet hair. And then I leave Radio 2 and I think, I hope I've done an okay show and I haven't let the team down. And I say goodbye to Jeff and he says goodbye. And then I'm suddenly in Strictly world and I arrive at Strictly and they're not interested in my intro into an Oasis track. They are fascinated by Tom Fletcher's heel leads and I'm like, what? But it's fine. I'm incredibly, incredibly lucky to be doing both shows.
And most years there's been a radio person on Strictly as well. So are you kind of cheering for the radio people?
I'm not allowed to have favourites.
Sorry,
you know, okay. That. You know that. That would be extremely bad, but yes.
And in terms of the show that you do, the listeners are very involved and that's deliberately so.
Deliberately so, because I mean, I didn't say this to Clara, and I feel bad saying it. I'm not particularly interested in a celebrity. I am very, very interested in our listeners. And so, I want them right up centre, forefront. You know, if we've got Mary Berry on, it shouldn't really be me asking the questions. I can ask some, and of course I'll have done all the research, but I'd much prefer to listen to Sue in Southampton ask her about her chutney.
And what radio do you listen to when you're driving about, going to the studio for Strictly and those kind of things? Obviously Radio 2, but if there's other things, what might you stray to?
I listen to Radio 2 absolutely obsessively because I know this is going to make you I can't say the word absolutely again because otherwise that's disgusting, but it might make you hurl, but we are a family and we talk about each other on our shows. Do you know what I mean? I was once listening to Steve Wright and he went, yeah, Claude played this the other day and I fancied having a listen to this. I was like, oh, okay. But I also love the Today programme. But, you know, the radio is always on. It always has been. When I was growing up, I was brought up by journalists and they knew that they had to, radio would get it first.
And if you could, I know you're going to do a pina colada thing soon with your show, but if you could.
It's not a thing, babe. It's a festival and you are invited.
So kind. But if you could do a show anywhere about anything with any guests, you know, open up your brain, tell us what's the kind of best thing you would want to ever do on the radio.
Okay, here's the thing. The best night I've ever had in my life is Liverpool. The best night I've ever had in my life. And indeed, Glasgow, where I was... I can't even tell you what I did because it's too filthy and I don't want to shock you. But I'd go to one of those places and I would just be with our listeners.
Super. Thanks for talking to us,
Claudia. Thank you.
Here's Ian Moss, the new CEO of Radio Centre. 3 or 4 months into the job now. How are you finding it?
Absolutely fantastic. I mean, for a child of radio to be able to work, I don't say in the medium because I think that overplays my role, but for the medium is an absolute, you know, it's a lifelong dream. It's fantastic. And it's been, you know, today's been a really interesting day of presentations and conversations.
Yeah, as you say, some really interesting topics, a lot of it around talent and things like that. Tell us what you've been saying here at the radio festival today.
Well, I think as people would expect, I'm coming from a commercial radio perspective and we're really pleased with, you know, the increases in listening, the way that forever, whatever changes has been in the audio landscape, the choice, the just, you know, incredible, amazing a range of things that people can do. Radio sits there still as the kind of axis around which everything else pivots. It's still there constantly gaining audiences, and that's incredibly powerful, I think, a reflection of the strength of the medium.
And obviously, you're representing commercial radio companies. There was a little dip in that kind of gap between commercial radio and the BBC. What does commercial radio need to do to keep pushing at that?
Well, I mean, our members will continue to adapt and continue to rise to the challenge. I think the really big thing I wanted to say today is, you know, from my perspective, you know, there are always going to be tensions between the scope of the BBC, and I described it as being, you know, we are good neighbours. Let's not fall into boundary disputes. But overwhelmingly, the strength of radio across the board is good for us all. And we need together to work on that ecosystem through the future challenges and the current challenges that arise.
And your background has been in a variety of civil service roles and that kind of thing. What does the radio industry kind of seem like coming from those kind of public service organisations that you've worked for in the past?
I mean, I've done a bit of everything, and I've done a bit of politics, and I've done a bit of civil service, and I've worked in the music industry for a long time. But, you know, radio is kind of where I started. Radio was where I was as a teenager, and going into Signal Radio and helping out in the evening. And that kind of community feel, even in a network world, even in a, you know, in a more consolidated world, it's still really what radio is about. That connection with the audiences, that conversation, that feeling that it's about the place and life that you are living. And that's just not changed from all my life. And so, but we're coming into an industry that is now, you know, really changed the technology, the way the efficiency of it, the sheer professionalism of the medium. And that's why it continues to be such an incredible success.
And the last 18 months have been difficult for some commercial radio companies in terms of revenues, and the pandemic has affected advertising spend. Are we starting to see the other side of that now?
Advertising has held up a lot better, I think, than anyone feared. But of course, it's been a very difficult 18 months. The return to revenues have been really overwhelming, I think, in the sense that the industry feels really positive about it. But, you know, that's still patchy. We are very concerned about local revenues, and I think local advertisers might take a little bit of time to come back to advertising in general. I mean, for them, it's been a survival, and so we are trying to do our bit. Radio Centre's launched Back in Brilliant Business. We are trying to explain the importance of radio as an advertising medium, the return on investment, and just the way in which local businesses can get their products and services heard in a way that really can resonate.
You've got your own event coming up next Wednesday. Tuning in, what's going to be happening there?
Well, I wouldn't want to preempt the amazing lineup we have, but we've got, I mean, we will be rattling through a host of the stars. It's a fantastic event. We've got a whole range of media talent and radio thinkers to support us, and we're all really looking forward to it. But, you know, do sign up on the Radio Centre website. It's a free event. We want as many people to come as possible, and I hope you enjoy it.
Charlotte Moore is the BBC's Chief Content Officer, been in the job for about a year now, added radio to your portfolio after many years working in TV. How are you finding it so far?
Oh, I'm really enjoying it. It's been absolutely fascinating. And, you know, joining during a pandemic means that I haven't, you know, I've met most of the team in person, but not everybody, and certainly not into the production teams, which, you know, I cannot wait, because that's been quite hard. Although Zoom's been an amazing way to meet a lot of people in a short time. So look, I've really enjoyed it. I've been amazed at the creativity. I think, you know, the radio industry is on fine form, and they've really leapt to the challenge of the pandemic as well, because they've realised how important it is to feel that, you know, you're there for your audience, and you're there in those really difficult times for companionship, but also to inform and to educate and entertain in that very BBC way. But I don't think it's ever been so true that when you're all locked down in your house and actually the radio's there for you, and it really kind of makes you feel part of something again, doesn't it?
Quite a few themes covered in your session at the festival today. Let's start with the discussion about getting out around the UK and moving radio services to places other than London. There's more of that going to be happening.
Yeah. No, look, I think that's all about answering the challenge of how do we make sure in the next few years we continue to be relevant to our audiences across the whole of the UK. Because it's something, I think, which is distinctively sort of the BBC remit to do that. And obviously, we've got lots of brilliant local radio stations as well and across the nations. But I think making sure that our networks really feel relevant and speak to people wherever you live in the UK. And that, I think, needs, you know, means that you've got to move teams, and you've got to move radio stations. And I think it's really exciting, because I think that gives great opportunity for people living in those areas to become part of that story. But also the stories that we're telling, I think coming from those areas and regions will just kind of diversify the stories that we tell. So I think it's a big part of what we need to do, and I think it's really exciting.
When 5 Live did that, there was a little bit of resistance. Are you seeing that anywhere with those other suggested moves?
Look, I think change is always hard for people, but I think, you know, we're living in a very fast-changing world and a very fast-changing industry. And I think radio has always been agile. It's always been really able to adapt to changes. So, look, I know change is hard for some, but I think it means opportunity for others, and I think that's exciting.
And you heading up both radio and TV now means more cross-collaboration across the BBC. How do you see that moving forward over the coming years?
Look, I think it is playing to our advantage. You know, I think as a broadcaster, we are radio, we are television. We're also online, looking at our online products. As you know, we can reach people in so many different ways. So we've got to take advantage of that. And we've got to think about how do we help audiences navigate between those services and platforms? How do we show them the wealth of content that we have? And the more that the teams kind of really work together and see the great opportunity and how you can sort of navigate from, you know, a great show on a Saturday night, but then you can go off and listen to the Strictly podcast or Line of Duty, and then you can go and listen to an, you know, Obsessed with Line of Duty podcast. That's to everybody's advantage, and it goes between telly and radio and back to telly. So I think everybody's really enjoying it because we're really seeing the fruits of that collaboration come through. You know, the Radio 2B challenge was a great way. It was Countryfile. It was the one show. It was Radio 2. It was Zoe Ball, you know, leading it. I think when everybody can see that it makes so much sense, you just can feel the buzz in the building. And it's kind of, in a way, I think everyone's going, why didn't we do this before? Why didn't we do more of it? You know, Radio 1 and BBC 3. It's really exciting, the conversations they're having.
You were also asked about collaboration outside of the BBC, and you suggested you'd had conversations with Global and Bauer.
Yeah, I've talked to all of them, I think. And they've been so, you know, and Radio Centre have been brilliant. And, you know, it's been great meeting Ian Moss as well. You know, I'm a real believer in, you know, look, I'm here to... Obviously, you know, I've had a lot to learn as well. So I've used the fact that I'm the newbie on the block to really kind of get to know people, because I think sharing, you know, when we're all part of the same industry, and I've always done it in television, I think sharing that intel and understanding each other's issues and perspectives is only a good thing.
And today you've announced the Radio Indies Development Fund. Tell us how that's going to work and how that's going to benefit the Indies.
Yeah, because obviously there's a growing, you know, really exciting creative indie sector. And I think, you know, we really, really want to support that. And obviously some of that has been already with our spend and the way we are spending more with the independent sector. But I think, you know, we know that for small companies, that's hard. You know, that's hard growing enough and getting enough business in. So I'm really hoping that this development fund will really help those companies and that talent, you know, kind of really understand what we're looking for, working really closely with commissioners and really focusing on what strand they're heading towards and whether they've got a podcast idea, but making sure that the development that goes into it is really focused and knows where it's trying to get to. And I think that's the beauty of a development fund, because it comes with a really kind of, you know, a strategic way of looking at your development rather than just, you know, kind of sending lots of ideas in and not knowing whether they're, you know, they're hitting the mark. So I think it's a really good thing to do.
It's £250,000. Is that to make the programs or just to develop those relationships?
No, it's £250,000 for the development fund, which will be divided into, you know, a number of companies that will get, you know, a chunk of money to develop.
And we learnt from your session on stage that you're big Six Music fans in your house. So I'm guessing under your tenure, there's no threat of closure now.
No, look, you know, look, I think Six Music does a brilliant job at meeting so many people's music needs, doesn't it? And, you know, and it's, again, it's so loved by its audience. So, you know, I think what we can do across the whole of our portfolio is really be there for different people for their different needs. And I think, you know, actually sounds has been such a great way of putting that all together and actually curating sounds in different ways. And, you know, we've had Radio 1, we've had Radio 1 Dance, we've had Radio 1 Relax, we've done these brilliant things that really it's getting more value actually out of the content we have and serving it up to people in different ways in an on-demand world. And I think that's why when you think about the live stations, but you also think about what we're able to do on sounds with different methods of curating and different ways of reaching audiences with different content, I think that's where, you know, the mix of our portfolio, both live and on demand, is very exciting.
Great to talk to you. Thank you, Charlotte.
That's all right. Very nice to meet you. Thank you.
So here we are at the end of Radio Festival 2021. Radio Today's Roy Martin's here. He's been writing up stories of things that have been going on today?
It's been quite entertaining. We've had some good quotes. We've not been tweeting the hell out of everybody today, as we usually do, because the whole thing, of course, has been online, so people can see for themselves what's going on. But we have had some interesting quotes. I won't bore you with them now because they're all online and you've just spent the last hour talking to everybody about them. But yeah, it has been good. I've enjoyed it. And hopefully this time next year, we can do it with people in the audience as well.
Fingers crossed. And Sam Bailey is here. He's the managing director of the Radio Academy, your kind of first big in-person radio event.
I've been really pleased with it. You guys seem pleased with it as well. And I've been getting lots of positive feedback. It's that weird kind of year, isn't it, of hybrid things. And I completely agree, Roy, that we really want to be back in a conference centre or something next year. But, you know, we had to make that decision earlier in the year with so much uncertainty and decided on this hybrid model. So we didn't want to do it where everybody was in everybody's bedroom again, like we did last year, though that seemed perfect for the time, didn't it? But we wanted to uplift it, give people, I think, a really good quality audio and video experience, get as many people as we could in the room. There were a couple of down the lines, which were fantastic, but just out of broadcasting sort of needs of our contributors. But to get the mass majority of speakers in this incredible venue from News UK with these amazing views. I think as a kid who grew up in the 80s, seeing St Paul's Cathedral over Asby, it just made me think of the start of Rainbow in Thames Television. But it's an amazing space. So we've had a great day, I think.
And some great discussions about talent and youth audiences in particular, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, you know, I think the focus of the festival that Dixie, our festival chair and the committee, worked on was redefining talent. So talent is used as a synonym, isn't it, for presenters. And it's high time to recognise that everybody that works in every bit of radio is the talent that pulls it together. So we need a new word for presenters. Let's just call them presenters. I thought that sequence in the middle with Matt Deegan really drilling down into some of that RAJAR data and essentially drawing the conclusion that your listening habits at 15 stick with you. And the numbers over the last, as everybody knows, the numbers of young listeners, live linear listening over the last sort of 20 years has really dropped. And then to follow that with Aled from Radio 1 and Rebecca from KISS talking about the work that they're doing there was a really good sort of sequence in the middle. And you know, the RAJAR is back, as we all know, and it's, you can extrapolate in lots of different ways. And I think it's really important to kind of look behind the, you know, RAJAR is one of those moments four times a year where everybody can win. Everybody's a winner. But it's, I think, that kind of analytical kind of thinking about where our audience is coming from in the future and where they've gone and what they're doing instead, because they might still well be with audio, just not perhaps with traditional live national linear radio. I thought that was a really interesting sequence as well.
Well done on getting all this together, Dixie and everybody else who's been involved with it. That's almost it from the special podcast. I've been told to not call it a one-off podcast from the Radio Today programme.
It's not a one-off if you do it every now and then. It's a special edition. In fact, the amount of people I've spoken to today, naming no names, but very, very high executives in the radio industry, have told me to tell you to get your ass back into gear and do this podcast more than once a quarter. So what do you say?
Yeah, I'll have a think about it.
I know you've got a 4-week-old baby now, and you've got a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, that's not important. Family's not important anymore. It's all about radio and you doing the podcast.
Yeah, it was when Aled from Radio 1 said it for me that going, oh, yeah, maybe I should do a bit more. He said, we're really missing listening to you every week. I'm like, well, I used to listen to you on the Chris Moyles show. So
so how did you feel when he quit his, when Chris Moyles quit and you couldn't hear him anymore? You probably cried.
Yes, Chris, I cried. Yes, if he's listening. No, well, we'll see. We'll see. But that's it from the special here at the 17th floor.
Back next week.
We might be back next week, but we probably won't be. But we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mike Essay.